Okay, Leviticus 13 and 14. Leviticus, the instruction manual for the Levitical priests, the descendants of Aaron. These are the guys that conducted worship in Old Testament times. Only the descendants of Aaron were the ones that conducted this kind of stuff. And this is their manual. That's why it's called Leviticus, because it's for the Levitical priests. As we've talked about before, the main theme is holiness. You're going to see this. It's in every chapter. It's woven through the whole thing. It's all about holiness, about being pure, about being separate, about being set aside for God. One verse that explains that, Leviticus 19:2. God says, "You shall be holy, for I, Yahweh, your God, am holy." The point where we're at here in Leviticus chapter 13, the priest first started their work, and when they first started their work, they ran into a little bit of trouble. Two of Aaron's sons, his two oldest sons, Nadab and Abihu, had been just a wee bit drunk, we think. They'd been tipping the bottle just a bit, and as a result, they did something stupid. And they offered something to God that God didn't ask for. And as a result, they died. And God pulled Aaron aside and gave him some instruction and said, "Look, pal, let's not repeat this again. Let's not have any do-overs with that. Let's not do that over again. When you guys are ministering, I want you to be sober," because he says in Leviticus chapter 10, he says, "I want you to be sober that you may distinguish between holy and unholy, and between unclean and clean, and that you may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which the Lord has spoken to them by the hand of Moses." God wants the priests sober so that they can discern, so they can tell the difference between holy and unholy, between clean and unclean. Now, I'm getting better at holy and unholy. We talk about the clean and unclean thing. I'm not quite sure I totally get a handle on all that means for us, because some of the stuff doesn't apply to us. The dietary laws no longer apply. We've covered that a few weeks back. From that point in chapter 10 onward, we've been getting a dictionary on what is holy and what's clean and what's not clean. We've been talking about food, about animals and stuff, and we're going to get more tonight about clean and unclean. I did find another ancient document. Archaeology has uncovered an ancient manuscript. You'll like this. Brings more light on the subject of clean and unclean. It's an ancient text known as Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy. And I found this is a section called Laws Pertaining to Dessert. This is interesting. It says, "For we judge," this is the way the translation goes. It says, "For we judge between the plate that is unclean and the plate that is clean, saying first, if the plate is clean, then you shall have dessert. But of the unclean plate, the laws are these. If you have eaten most of your meat and two bites of your peas, with each bite consisting of not less than three peas each, or in total six peas eaten where I can see, and you have also eaten enough of your potatoes to fill two forks, both forkfuls eaten where I can see, then you shall have dessert. But if you eat a lesser number of peas and yet you eat the potatoes, still you shall not have dessert. For if you eat the peas yet leave the potatoes uneaten, you shall not have dessert, no, not even a small portion thereof. If you try to deceive by moving the potatoes or peas around with a fork, that it may appear that you have eaten what you have not, you will fall into iniquity, and I will know, and you shall have no dessert." So there we go. Just more clarification on what it means to clean and unclean. I really thought I'd get a little more chuckle, especially out of the front row up here. I thought you guys would like this. Okay. Leviticus chapter 13, verses 1 through 8. We're going to talk about scabs. "And the Lord spoke to Moses," and what do you think? Clean or unclean? Scabs? We are going to vote for, okay. How much pictures? You're going to get some pictures tonight. I'll warn you. You might not want to sit in the front row. Verse 1, "The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, when a man has on the skin of his body a swelling, a scab, or a bright spot, and it becomes on the skin of his body like a leprous sore, then he shall be brought to Aaron the priest or to one of his sons the priests. Now, there's a word I need to acquaint you with, and the word is translated through the passage leprous or leprosy. The Hebrew word tzara'at. It is translated leprosy. It probably could very well be translated skin disease, because it's broader than just what we call leprosy. It's going to also include things like mold and mildew, things that houses and pieces of cloth get. So it's not just strict people. Some people have a hard time with these couple chapters because they don't get that. They think, well, this isn't the way leprosy works. Well, it's because it's bigger than leprosy. We're talking about a broader category. Traditionally, we call nowadays what we call leprosy has a more technical name. It's called Hansen's disease. It looks something like that. It can, and there's even far worse things. I decided not to put them up. You can thank me for that later if you want. Hansen's disease is transmitted. I did a little more homework this time than I did last time I taught through Leviticus, and I found out actually Hansen's disease is communicable. You can catch it. It is transmitted by droplets from the nose or mouth when it is in close contact with an untreated person. Nowadays, the disease is curable with antibiotics. Symptoms, and this is right off of a medical web page, and I thought this was fascinating because it fits so well with our passage. Symptoms include skin lesions that are lighter than your normal skin color. The lesions have a decreased sensation to touch, heat, or pain. And what happens is because you lose the ability to feel. And if you can't feel, let's say, in your fingers, you're gonna stub your fingers, you're gonna pick up something hot in the stove, and it's gonna burn your hand, and you're not gonna even feel it. And as a result, people will lose their fingers, their toes, sometimes their noses. Sometimes animals in the night in some faraway places where people get leprosy, they come and they eat on parts of the body and they can't feel it. And that's why we think of a leper as somebody who's that as if the stuff drops off. It doesn't drop off. It's injured, it's eaten off or something like that. Lesions, another symptom is that it's a lesion that doesn't heal. For weeks and weeks and weeks, and it doesn't heal. That's one of the symptoms, and you're going to see that woven into what the priests are asked to do, to keep checking on it, to keep checking on it. If it doesn't heal, and it doesn't heal, and it doesn't heal, then eventually you come to the conclusion it's what they're calling leprosy. Medical scholars say that other things in this chapter are described, such as there's a disease, there's something called favus. It's something in the scalp. And your hair starts to fall out, and you get these ugly growths. It's a fungal disease. We're going to see this word applied to moldy clothes and houses. Now, there are medical implications. The priest is not going to function like a doctor. The priest is functioning more like a public health official. And so you'll see the priest establishing quarantines. We're getting kind of educated about this stuff, aren't we, with H1N1 and stuff like that, where they're talking about quarantining, you know, groups and schools, and you hear about this where an army division gets H1N1 and the guys are stuck in quarantine and they're kept separate from everybody. Nothing new. Because the Jews did this, they had better health overall than many of the ancient cultures because they practiced some of these things. Now, there's going to be spiritual implications as well. There seems to be a sense in the Bible that leprosy is a symbol, a picture of sin. When Miriam rebels in Numbers chapter 12, she is struck with leprosy. When Gehazi, he was Elisha's servant, and when he lies and takes the money from Naaman the leper, he becomes a leper because of his deception. When King Uzziah brazenly walks into the temple and starts acting like he's the priest, which he's not, leprosy breaks out on his forehead. And so we see there's a connection between sin and leprosy in the Scripture. What we're going to see in some of these lessons are things that can apply to sin. In fact, some of it almost going to sound like a 12-step group, so the way some of this works. It's kind of interesting. Nothing new under the sun. A person in sin spiritually is cut off from fellowship. They may still be coming to church, but when they're in rebellious sin in their life, there's something broken. You know, nobody's pulling their covers. They're covering up. Now, nobody knows it. Maybe. We might kind of suspect that something kind of, you know, something's kind of strange about Rich today. What is it? You know, I don't know. I just pray for him, you know. But sin does that. It cuts us off from people. It cuts us off from God. Just like you're going to see the lepers being cut off from the community. Like leprosy, sin makes you less sensitive. You lose sensation. It's like your heart gets calloused. And you don't feel the things of the Lord as much. Why? Because you're shutting him out. And you're building up a resistance to what he wants to do. And he's trying to say, oh, I would change that affair. Oh, no. Did I hear something? I didn't hear something. You know. And God says, no, sweetheart, I want you to change this. This is wrong. You're hurting yourself. I didn't hear anything, you know. It desensitizes us. And even though nowadays we can cure this leprosy, Hansen's disease, even the scalp thing, we can cure these things with our modern medicine. In those days, they couldn't. You had it, you died with it. That was it. It was incurable. And there is a sense that sin, too, is incurable. You can't do anything about it on your own. You need help. You need major help. Jeremiah 17:9 says, this is the NIV, it says, the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? Well, God can. God can cure it. And as we're going to see with leprosy, you know, in ancient days, the only one that could do anything was God. God can do something about sin. Verse 3, Leviticus 13, verse 3. The priest shall examine. So somebody's got like a scab, a swelling, a bright spot, and something's wrong. And so you bring him to the priest, and he breaks out his little priestly, you know, how to do it manual. Turns to chapter 13. That's what he's going to do. The priest shall examine the sore on the skin of the body. And if the hair on the sore has turned white, and the sore appears to be deeper than the skin of his body, it is a leprous sore. Then the priest shall examine him and pronounce him unclean. So if he looks at this thing on the guy's skin, and it looks like it's deeper, it's not skin deep, it's deeper than the skin, then there's one of the giveaway telltale signs. It's deeper than the skin. There are some things that are not just skin deep, and that's a problem. You know, sometimes our problems, you know, sometimes I'm in a bad mood because, you know, I just had a hard day, you know, and that's just the way it is. But sometimes I'm in a bad mood because there's something deeper going on. Sin is more than skin deep. In 18th century England, this is what Warren Wiersbe writes this. He says, in 18th century England, if you were convicted for stealing, the judge or the authorities could chop off your right hand. How's that? Could you see that happening today? You know, 18th century England, you're guilty of stealing, then take your hand. And if you're convicted a second time, guess what? The left hand gets chopped off. Wiersbe writes, he says, I recall reading about a pickpocket who lost both hands but managed to succeed in his career because he perfected the art of picking pockets with his teeth. Jesus said, for out of the heart proceeds... Oh, that didn't land in the right place. For out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man. It's more than skin deep. The root of the problem is the heart. Verse 4. But if the bright spot is white on the, pay attention to this now. This is important. You might get a test afterwards. If the bright spot is white on the skin of his body and does not appear to be deeper than the skin and its hair is not turned white, then the priest shall isolate the one who has the sore for 7 days. And the priest shall examine him on the seventh day. And if indeed the sore appears to be as it was, and the sore has not spread on the skin, the priest shall isolate him another 7 days. Then the priest shall examine him again on the seventh day. And indeed, if the sore has faded and the sore has not spread on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him clean. It is only a scab, and he shall wash his clothes and be clean. But if the scab should spread all over the skin after he has been seen by the priest for his cleansing, he shall be seen by the priest again. So if it comes back, and if the priest sees that the scab has indeed spread on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is leprosy. So there is a sense that if you're not quite sure what it is, you wait 7 days and you check again. And you keep waiting another 7 days. Come back next week. We have a standing appointment every Thursday. You come back and we'll keep checking this thing. Keep checking it over and over and over. And there is a lesson here, gang. Take time for discernment. Doesn't always happen overnight. You can't always tell right from wrong in some situations or what's going on in a person's life. You can't always tell right away. Some people think that they can. And they get a sometimes and boy, it's a dangerous thing when you've formed an opinion about someone. And you think this person is bad. You know, you get, and sometimes we get that feeling, don't we? Sometimes you're with somebody and they're talking to you and you just, oh, you know, I don't like talking to this guy. I just feel weird, you know. The problem is you go away convinced that they're evil. It may be that they just, you know, their mom just died yesterday or something like that. And that's why they're acting strange or goofy. You don't know. You don't know. You need to take time. You need to take time. Give things time. Don't form quick judgment. Sometimes you need to, but gang, be careful. Sometimes things take time. People looking for a spouse, take time. Take time. Looking to hire somebody, give it some time. Give it some thought. We need to be careful in the church about putting people into important high-profile positions too quickly. Paul writes to Timothy, he says, do not lay hands on anyone hastily nor share in other people's sins. Keep yourself pure. No, he's talking in the context here. He's talking about elders. And the laying on of hands he's talking about is putting somebody into a position, like ordaining them. He says, don't do that too quickly. You grab somebody, you know, that's a brand new person right off the street, or they just came from another church, you know, and boy, you're just convinced this guy's the best thing since sliced bread. He says, watch out, pal, because you may be jumping into something that's been going along wrong for a long time. Pay attention. He says, in a few verses later, he says, some men's sins are clearly evident, preceding them to judgment, but those of some men follow later. In other words, some people, it's really clear that this guy has a drinking problem because he's laying down on the ground, throwing up, and he smells like alcohol, and his clothes are in tatters. Yeah, oh, I get it. I get it. Some people, I've known people, I don't know, I've known people who are, I find out later that they're alcoholics. I didn't even have a clue. Didn't even have a clue. Some people, it's evident right up front, the problem. Some people, you have to wait a while to see the problem. He says, likewise, the good works of some are clearly evident, and those that are otherwise cannot be hidden. In other words, there's some people that they may do a lot of good things, but you don't know it right away because they're not big at putting the spotlight on themselves. So you've got to give it time. So we need to learn to take time for discernment. Take time to make correct decisions. Oswald Chambers said, don't jump to conclusions too quickly. Many things lie unsolved. And the biggest test of all is that God looks as if he were totally indifferent. See, sometimes it looks like, well, God, why aren't you answering my prayer? Well, he just wants you to wait a little longer, that's why. And you may think he doesn't care and he doesn't have an answer. He does. It's just not for two more weeks. And you just have to learn to be patient. In a manufacturing town in Scotland, a young lady began teaching a Sunday school class of poverty-stricken boys. This is a number of years ago. The most unpromising youngster was a boy named Bob. After the first two or three Sundays, he did not return. So the teacher went to look for him. And although the superintendent had given Bob some new clothes, they were already torn and worn and dirty when the teacher found him. He was given another new suit and he came back to Sunday school. But soon he quit again and the teacher went out to find him once more. When she did, she found him and the second set of clothes had gone the way of the first. "I am completely discouraged about Bob," she told the superintendent. "I guess we must give up on him." "Oh, please don't do that," he pleaded. "I believe there is still hope. Try him one more time." They gave Bob a third suit of clothes, and this time he began to attend faithfully. It wasn't long till later that he became a Christian and eventually even taught the same Sunday school class. The young student, his name was Robert Morrison, who later became the first Protestant missionary to China, wanted to give up on him. And somebody said, "Let's just wait a little longer. Let's just keep at it a little bit more." Giving it time. Giving it time. Don't be quick to give up on people. Give it some time. Chapter 13, verse 9. Verses 9 through 17, we're not going to read it. How about that? Old sores and clean sores. He's going to talk about a person who has a sore that just doesn't go away. Sores that don't heal would be considered leprous. Raw flesh is considered unclean, leprous. Verses 18 through 23, I was thinking about this one. Boils. We could talk about boils on the flesh. And we find out that and when the boils are unclean, if you really want to learn about that. We're not going to read it all. You can do that later if you want for extra credit. Okay, I'll put a little star on your notes next week if you come back and tell me that you've read no pictures of boils. I thought about it. I really did. There is a lesson here in all of this, though. To learn from the truth. I don't know about you, but if I was told that my job as a priest now is one of the things people are going to do are going to come to me with these things, and I got to figure out whether they should be quarantined or not. And I don't know about you, but I mean I like medical stuff. I like to collect medical facts in my head, you know, pretend like, well, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I did spend the night at Holiday Inn or whatever. I like to pretend like I know more than I do. I'm not a doctor. I would probably be a little bit lost. So it's kind of cool that God gives these priests a manual to work with. You just got to read the manual. You got to do what the manual says. Sometimes we can get lost trying to decide what's right and what's wrong if we don't stay in the Word. You've got a manual that tells you what's right in life and what's wrong in life. During the days that Newt Rockne was the coach of Notre Dame football, this is a long time ago, you can tell by the picture. During that time, there was a sports columnist in a South Bend newspaper that was earning the reputation of being the meanest, most cutting writer of the country. The anonymous writer, who knew Notre Dame well, wrote about the team's weaknesses. He pointed out the mistakes of individual players. He told about those who were lazy and about those who broke training and didn't discipline themselves. Of course, this column made the players roaring mad. The truth hurt, and the players complained to Rockne. He listened with sympathy, but he said he could not stop the writer. He advised that the only way the players could do so was to go out and play the game so well they could prove him wrong. Are you with me? They found out later the writer of the column was Newt Rockne. As the coach of the team, he was best acquainted with their weaknesses. The column was his ingenious device to develop a better team. Sometimes, gang, the scriptures point out things that can hurt our feelings. And I read something, or somebody says something to me, or I hear, listen to K-Wave or something, and something hits me, and I think, how dare he? How dare he use this story that sounds so close to mine? Maybe we're the one with the boil on the skin. And something touches a little too close to home. We want to hide it. We want to cover it up. We'd say it's no big deal. And yet, in truth, it could be killing us. Pay attention. Learn from the truth. There's reasons for God's word. There's reasons why when he says something is wrong, there's a reason for it. It's not to spoil your fun. It's because he knows what's right. He knows how you function best. Pay attention to the truth. Chapter 13, verse 24. Verses 24 through 28 is a section on burns, what to do with burns, and when burns become leprous. We won't read those. Verses 29 through 37, we hear about scalps and beards, what to do when all the disease is in the hairy stuff. Verse 29, if a man or a woman has a sore on the head or the beard. Now, do you like have a problem with the way he wrote that? A man or a woman with a problem in the scalp or the beard? You know, a woman with a beard? I don't know. Okay. Anyway, so he goes on and he'll talk about when there's a discoloration in the skin under it that it might be leprous. It's all very similar to all the things that we read in those first couple verses. Very similar. Except he goes through each different situation. Verse 38. Bald spots. Spots, bald and unclean. There's white spots, there's red spots. Kind of sound like a, to me, making me think what am I thinking? Big fish, little fish. Yeah, Dr. Seuss kind of a thing. White spots, red spots. Actually, baldness is okay, unless losing your hair is not, it doesn't make you unclean, unless there are gross things growing out of your skin, then it's yuck. Verse 45, now the leper on whom the sore is, his clothes shall be torn and his head bare, and he shall cover his mustache and cry, unclean, unclean. He shall be unclean. All the days he has the sore, he shall be unclean. He is unclean, and he shall dwell alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. No. This is, again, this is the bottom line. Somebody's brought to the priest, and the priest declares them to be leprous. That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to tear their clothes so that something looks like something's wrong. It's a sign of mourning, typically. The person's supposed to cover their face. That's kind of interesting. You know, with the H1N1 epidemic, it says cover the face, you know, cover his mustache. It's almost like, what, are you thinking not to spread the disease? It's interesting. And he's supposed to shout out and let people know, you better stand back, buddy. We might say today, I'm contagious. They were to say, unclean, unclean. Very similar to all the stuff we're hearing just in the last couple of weeks with the H1N1. You know, if you've got a fever, don't go to work. Don't come to church. Don't shake hands. That's why we're doing these cute little, you know, fist bump things, you know, to try to keep away from the disease stuff, you know. There is a lesson here about separation from sin. The leper had to live outside of the camp. Not just a section inside a camp. He had to live outside of the camp until he was cleansed from his leprosy. And if you remember the prognosis for leprosy, there is no cure. So you are out. These kinds of skin diseases were contagious. And there is a principle here, gang. Sin is contagious. Sin is contagious. I know we're all infected with it already, in a sense. But there's a sense that it's contagious. When Paul was concerned about the Corinthian church in his first letter to the Corinthians, one of his concerns with them was because there was a man who was shacking up with his, well, we're hoping it was his stepmom. We're hoping it wasn't his real mom. With his father's wife. And we're assuming that it was his stepmom. But it's pretty gross, kind of a yucky, kind of a kind of thing. Makes everybody's skins crawl. They thought it was cool. They were patting themselves on the back because they were being so open and so tolerant. Paul says to them, 1 Corinthians chapter 5, he says, "Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore, purge out the old leaven that you may be a new lump, since you are truly unleavened. For indeed, Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us." And there's a couple images in here, the thing of leaven and unleavened bread and all. Leaven is like sin, similar to sin, and it's an infection that multiplies, that spreads throughout the lump of dough. And if you want to bake unleavened bread, you don't let any leaven get in the dough because it will spread and infect the whole lump of dough. And so the point that Paul is trying to make to the Corinthians is that when a person is in open, rebellious, I could care less what you think, sin against God, Paul says, you know, at some point you have to separate this person because they're going to affect everyone. Now, that's kind of hard because, frankly, our church is filled with sinners. So if you want to get real technical, and people will get real technical, there will be times where people say, "Why haven't you kicked so and so out of the church?" The issue to me is whether it's open, rebellious sin, and it needs to be confronted. There are situations where I throw up my hand. I go, "I have no idea what's going on." So we let God deal with it. That's fine. But we need to be careful because there's a separation that ought to occur. There's something that we need to separate ourselves as much as we can from the chance to get infected again with a new thing, to be tempted with a new thing. Now, Paul rebukes the Corinthians. Is it the next chapter or is it the next book? It's Corinthians 6. I can't remember if it's 1st or 2nd Corinthians 6, where he says, "I wrote to you not to associate with immoral people. But I didn't mean the immoral people of this world. I meant the so-called brother or sister that's immoral." He says, because he doesn't want you to not reach out to non-believers who are immoral. Some people make the mistake of they think, "Well, I got to keep separate from sin, so I got to stay away from every sinner. And let's all go live in a monastery up on the hill somewhere and put a big wall around it and say, 'No sinners allowed,' you know." No, that's not the case. But it's when someone who is claiming to walk with the Lord but is walking in open rebellion, at some point the issue has to be dealt with. Separation from sin. Chapter 13, verse 47. We now go into a new category of leprosy. We get leprous clothing. Leprous clothing. These are the days before washing machines and Tide and Clorox bleach and things like this. And so there could be times when you will develop a problem in your clothing. You get, and he's talking about these weird spots that develop in the clothing and the whoop and the wharf and the, all this kind of stuff. And we might call it mold and mildew. Okay? That's what we're going to call it nowadays. But they put it under the category of leprosy. And again, for the sake of time, we're not going to read the whole thing, but let me just point out this. God wants you to wear clean clothes. I don't mean fresh smelling clothes. I'm talking about clothes that don't fall in an unclean category. Now, and I don't mean that, but you know what I mean? I don't think we need to go overboard, and I'm not advocating that women all wear burkas. But it's a good thing when our purpose for what we wear isn't to catch the eye of the opposite sex. And that goes around men and women as well. We want to dress in a way that's clean. That's what we want to do. And so I think that there is a little bit of a lesson here about wearing clean clothes. How's that? Okay, chapter 14, verse 1 through 32. We're going to read some of this, but we're going to deal with what you do when a leper gets healed. Now, wait a minute, Rich. I thought you just said the lepers don't get healed. Well, in the Old Testament, I think there is one incidence of, no, actually two. Miriam got healed of leprosy, and Naaman got healed of leprosy. But beyond that, no, we don't. It was an uncommon thing to get healed with leprosy. But here we have this interesting chapter all devoted to the ritual for what you do when someone does get healed from leprosy. Fascinating. Verse 1, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, this is the law of the leper for the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought to the priest. Now, leprosy wasn't something that you got over. And yet here, God is going to have a provision for what you do when you do get healed. Nothing is too hard for God. Jeremiah 32:27, behold, I am Yahweh, the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? In one of the cases of leprosy in the Old Testament, this fellow named Naaman, he was a general in the army of Syria. He got leprosy. And his little slave girl said, hey, there's this guy in Israel, in the nation of Israel. And I just know that if you went to him, he probably could get God to heal you or something, you know. And so Naaman's boss, the king of Syria, writes a letter to Elisha's boss, the king of Israel, and saying, why don't you heal my guy? I'm going to send my guy to you. We'll pay you well. You heal the guy. And the king of Israel is reading this letter saying, do this absolutely impossible thing for me. And he says in 2 Kings 5:7, it says, and it happened when the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his clothes and said, am I God to kill and make alive that this man sends a man to me to heal him of leprosy? Therefore, please consider and see how he seeks a quarrel with me. He's just trying to have a reason to invade us and to have us all put to death. He's just, because this is an impossible thing. Now, did it stop God from healing Naaman just because the king of Israel couldn't figure it out? No. No, it didn't. When Naaman found Elisha, he was told to dip himself 7 times in the Jordan River, and after, with a little convincing, he finally did. And he was healed. God healed him. God did it. When Jesus walked the earth, one of the odd miracles that he did several times was to heal lepers. Look at Matthew 8. Why don't you flip a few pages and keep yourself awake here. Matthew chapter 8. Matthew chapter 8, verse 2. It says this, and behold, a leper came and worshipped him, worshipped Jesus, kneeled down at his feet, saying, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Then Jesus put out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. Immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, see that you tell no one, but go your way, and watch this, show yourself to the priest and offer the gift that Moses commanded as a testimony to them. He's pointing back to this chapter. He's saying to this fellow, I want you to go to these priests because they got this like manual of what to do. Probably haven't read this part in a long time. And I want you to blow their mind and say, I was a leper and I've been healed. So let's get out the manual and figure out what we're supposed to do. And he says, for a testimony to them. Now, I think I can think of two different things that are going to be testimonies to them. For one thing, it's going to be a testimony to them that this guy got healed. They're going to be blown away. We haven't heard of this since Naaman got healed. This is an awesome, amazing thing. But the other thing that's going to be a testimony to them is this ritual itself. It's filled with symbolism. It's the most bizarre ritual. I think it's about the most bizarre ritual I've seen in the Scripture. It's absolutely bizarre, this thing. So let's look at this, verse 3. So, the guy's been healed. He's brought to the priest. The priest is told about this guy. And the priest shall go out to the camp, go out of the camp, and the priest shall examine him. And indeed, if the leprosy is healed in the leper, then the priest shall command to take for him who is to be cleansed two living and clean birds. Look at this grocery list. Cedar wood, scarlet, like a scarlet thread, hyssop, that's a kind of a plant, and the priest shall command that one of the birds be killed in an earthen vessel over running water. As for the living bird, he shall take it, the cedar wood and the scarlet and the hyssop, and dip them and the living bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the running water. He shall sprinkle it, this living bird, sprinkle it seven times on him who is to be cleansed from the leprosy. So this water is supposed to, this bloody cedar, hyssop, scarlet water is supposed to be sprinkled on this guy seven times on him who is to be cleansed from the leprosy, and shall pronounce him clean, and shall let the living bird loose in the open field. Now, is that like cuckoo or what? I mean, what a bunch of crazy stuff. And so the leper, remember, the leper, because of his disease, he is excluded from not only being able to worship at the tabernacle, he cannot come near the tabernacle. He cannot present offerings because he's unclean. That's one of the things that happens with being unclean. He's not only excluded from the tabernacle, but he's excluded from the whole camp. He has to live outside of town. And so we're going to see two rituals. This is the first one. We're going to see two rituals. The first one is going to be restoring him back into the camp. The second one will restore him to the tabernacle. So there's like two steps of restoration. One is to get him back into the city limits, back into the place where he can hang out with people. And then the second one is going to make him so that he can start worshiping God again. You with me? So this first one is the one that gets him back into camp. Now, this whole thing about the birds and the waters and the stuff like this, different approaches to this, and I'm sure depending on how many commentaries you pick up, you might find that many number of different ideas of what people say. Some have suggested that the slain bird symbolizes the death that this leper has just escaped from, and that the released bird is symbolically carrying away the polluted skin disease off into who knows where. That's what some people suggest. I like the suggestion that maybe this paints a picture of Jesus. Birds don't belong in clay jars. They belong in the heavens. Is this true or false? Would you agree? Everybody would agree with me? Birds do good in the air, like more than like anybody else. You okay with me on this one? Okay, that's good. Jesus came from... Okay, Jesus came from heaven. Very good. Just like where the birds are from. And he took on human flesh like a clay pot. He took on human flesh so that he could die for our sin. You following me? The bird is killed, running water, the pot, the blood, into the clay pot. And then this is all splashed on the bird that's going to be flying free. Could be a picture of the resurrection. Don't think of two different birds. Think of it being, I mean, how in the world are you going to paint a picture of the resurrection? You're going to make the bird come back to life? Now, that ain't going to do that one, okay? So you have two birds. You have one bird that shows the picture of the death. And then you have the other one going back to where birds belong, up into the sky. You see the picture? There's the cedar wood, the scarlet string, and the hyssop. These are the same ingredients that are used in a ritual in Numbers chapter 19, the sacrifice of the red heifer. And that's a whole other story where you take this animal and you sacrifice it and you burn it up to pieces and you take the ashes and you hold on to the ashes. And then when somebody needs a special purification from some kinds of sins, you take water and you just put it in the ashes and you sprinkle them with this ashy water and stuff like that and stuff like that. But to me, this even more reminds me of the cross. Jesus died on a cross made out of wood, spilled his own blood, it's the color of scarlet, and drank vinegar that had been dipped in a hyssop branch. Not a coincidence. Not a coincidence. I think he's painting a picture so that back in Matthew 8, when the guy gets healed, and Jesus says, go to the priest. Don't stop and talk to anybody else. You can do that later. Go to the priest. Show them what happened for a testimony for them. Because they're gonna start doing this ritual. I don't know if they've even ever done this. I don't know if they practice this thing. But they're going to do this, and they're going to go, what is this all about? It's a kind of like a film trailer, preview of coming attractions, coming a year or two in the future to a theater near you. This is what's going to happen. Verse 8. He who is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes, shave off all his hair, and wash himself in water that he may be clean. After that, he shall come into the camp and shall stay outside his tent 7 days. But on the seventh day, he shall shave off all the hair off his head. I thought he just did that. He has got to do it again. Shave off all, some people grow it back really quick. Shave off all the hair off his head, his beard and his eyebrows, all his hair he shall shave off. He shall wash his clothes and wash his body in water, and he shall be clean. Now, I was thinking about this. Is the sound up? I hope the sound's up because we're going to need it up. You may want to hold on to it for a second because I don't know if it's loud enough. It says he shall shave off all his hair. Now, I was thinking about this today. I was thinking that maybe some of this is so that everybody sees that you really are healed. So, like some of the stuff, remember, was in the skin and the hair and stuff like that. So you shave everything off so everybody can see that, you know, look, you got a nice, clean, bald head, and there's no lesions and sores and all this kind of stuff. It's nice and clean. Everybody can see it. In fact, you don't even go hide out in your tent. How about that for pulling covers? You got to spend the next week sleeping in front of your tent with your head shaved so everybody can see what's going on. Now, I was thinking a little more, probably thinking too much about this, about the shaving of the head, and because actually, even though it's like a cool thing nowadays to have, I mean, just everybody look at Mark. I mean, is that cool or what? I mean, it's a very cool thing. Everybody likes we used to call it the Kojak look, you know, years ago. You know, everybody, it's a cool thing to have that, right? Not so under Israelite customs. In fact, you remember the story? When David was king, and he heard that his buddy, the king of the Ammonites, had died. And he sent some messengers across the river over to the Ammonites, and he wanted his friends to go over and console the son and say, pal, we're with you. David is with you. He feels so bad for you, you know, and he's praying for you. But what happened is when the messengers showed up, this young prince's friend said, oh, they're here to spy on you. Now they're going to take advantage and raid us and kill us all. And so what did they do? Remember the story? They cut their beards off, like cut everything in half. They cut their clothes off like from here below. It's like pretty embarrassing, you know, and sent them off. And what was the point of it all? Is to embarrass them. It was to bring shame on them. Okay, here we go. Video clip.